Hello, hello. You're listening to the Goggler Podcast. Ian Bahir and Uma with you as always. Happy Chinese New Year to everyone who is celebrating it. We know this year is going to be a little different, but rest assured, we're all having reunion dinners by ourselves in our own homes as well.
Gong xi fa chai.
We know, you know, the biggest problem with this year's Chinese New Year, of course, is that you can't visit the elderly in your family, which means one, you can't see your grandparents, but two, they can't give you that delicious ang pao.
But on the plus side, you won't murder them in their sleep.
Exactly.
What?
Accidentally, of course, by way of COVID.
I think it's just shortening it down to COVID. I think that's what people need to think of. It's not like, oh, I got someone sick and they died. There's no getting out of it. It's just a straight to the point, you will murder your grandparents in your sleep if you come over. In their sleep. Not in your sleep.
And that's it, right? It's I guess in some way it is murder, right?
Yeah, normalize expecting murder for leaving the house. Like, you just know, I want to go over to my house, my friend's house, and have some mandarins. And if I do that, there's a chance I might accidentally murder a whole load of people. Am I okay with that? If you are okay with that, you're a monster. I don't want you coming over here. But otherwise, you know, go ahead.
Yeah.
Knock yourself out and the people you visit.
But don't bring any yisang. We're not sharing food.
Oh, no.
It's a long weekend over here in Malaysia, which means even more time to sit in front of the television. And we're going to be talking about a few new releases. We've got Bliss on Amazon Prime Video, which stars Owen Wilson and Salma Hayek. And of course, the big new release, I guess, is the long-awaited finale to the To All the Boys trilogy.
Hang on. Sorry, can I just jump in?
Yeah.
Has it really been long-awaited?
Highly anticipated, yes. Anticipated, probably.
Yes, correct. Thank you, Ian.
There are a lot of young people who are just like got speculation about what's going to happen. I'm like, there's a book out there. You can read the book. You know exactly what's going to happen.
But then they'll have to read a book, Uma, and spend more than 2 hours on it.
But they've been waiting for this movie.
But yeah, they've been waiting a year, I think.
Yeah, thank you, Ian.
I think that's acceptable. I mean, was it... I don't know. Were the gaps between Harry Potter the movies that long? Were they were like two and a half years, right?
Yeah, except for part one and part two of the last film. I think that was a year apart. Yeah.
I mean, we were blessed when we got The Lord of the Rings a year apart. Like, that should be, you know, that's highly anticipated.
And even then, it almost killed everybody trying to make the damn movie.
This movie just makes you want to kill everybody.
Yes.
Ooh, foreshadowing.
This one's got another mouthful of a title. It's To All the Boys, Always and Forever, lifting the title from the novel by Jenny Han, of course. But we'll get into that a little later. Not that I've already spoiled the review, but it's just me. These boys might fucking love the film. Who knows? But before we get into Bliss and To All the Boys, we thought we want to do a quick review of a new cartoon series that is on Netflix at the moment called Kid Cosmic. Ian sent out the trailer to our Slack group a while ago because he had this intuition that Bahe would absolutely love this. It had allusions to two of Bahe's favorite things, Green Lantern and cats.
Yay!
It's also by Craig McCracken, who did Dexter's Lab and Powerpuff Girls. So, you know, it's coming from good pedigree. And can I just say, these 10, 20-minute episodes were the most fun I've had in a while. It ends on such a great note. And wow, the show is so good.
Yeah. I was waiting for Ian to jump in. But no, I completely agree with you. I've only seen I just finished the 7th episode. And it's, you know what, it's one of those things where I watch an episode and I'm like, okay, I'm just going to finish this and I'm going to go back to doing some work, go through some, you know, mind-numbing statistics and Excel spreadsheets. And then as the episode ends, I'm like, I'll just do one more, you know, I'll just do one more. It's a great show. I think it's got a lot of Powerpuff Girls in it, I think. It's got a lot of the same feels that Powerpuff Girls has, but, you know, with a really... excitable young boy who's been given a power ring, which is probably the worst thing in the world, but it's great. I really, really enjoy this.
I think I'm only 4 episodes in, so I think I'm a little cooler on it just because from the trailer and from the first episode, like the first episode, before anything happens, he runs around explaining the plot of the series. Like, yeah. You know, he would love to be the kind of kid who finds a power ring and all this kind of stuff happens. And I love the fact that they're just blatantly ripping off the Green Lantern. Like, it's Green Lantern.
It's Green Lantern.
Just with a few extra rings.
And like, they're not real rings. You know, they're kind of stones that he's fashioned into rings. But I'll let it go. No, it's great.
Yeah, I think that's a brilliant shorthand, and that's a brilliant way to remix something that you love without getting the license, because it's a pain in the ass, and you could do other things you wouldn't be able to do with the license. But I think that it's getting old, like a little bit of the complaint from last week with Space Sweepers. Like, I found, like, as I said, four in, but I'm like, it's a little too frenetic. It seems to settle down when I'm watching the fourth episode, or it did for a second before they just did like a series of mini episodes with different people coming to get the rings, which.
Oh, I love that episode.
Which is cute. I'm getting into that. But the first couple, I'm like, okay, you've used this shorthand to set everything up. Now go do something with it. And I wasn't getting something with it. Like, even the grandpappy, when he gets the powers, it's like, we're not covering that at all. We're not going to cover how we learn to use them. We're not going to do anything. It's just, he's part of the gang now. Cool. We're going to spend long moments doing the straight story. David Lynch's The Straight Story, but with a cat walking down the highway. Great. Yes. Love it. I love shows. Like when Family Guy used to waste like a minute out of its 23-minute running time with Peter just holding his knee or something like that. That's great. Love all that stuff. But I think maybe it's just that I don't like the when that comes on, I'm like, oh Christ, next. I don't know. It should be awesome, but for some reason, it's just not gelling with me. And every time I hear that, it kind of like, okay, do some stuff. But I do love the style of it because it looks like it's sketchy comic book pages kind of thing. And even when they crash zoom on someone's face for a reaction shot, it's thicker lines. It's like, it's very cool looking. I think I just need to get more to get one over.
You're right though. It is incredibly frenetically paced, right? He hasn't changed his style of pasting since Powerpuff Girls or even Dexter's Lab for that matter. I haven't seen any of the other stuff he's done, but he's done quite a bit of stuff in between those periods. But that style of storytelling is still there. I think what I liked about it was how it would always subvert my expectations. Like what they were doing with Lobster Man or Lobster Guy.
Hello, Lobster Boy. Everything with him is great.
He is hilarious, right? And just to play on alien invasions, coming to Earth, wanting to destroy this backwater of a planet. I like the setting of that small desert town where nothing happens. It's something that's been used over and over again in so many movies and TV shows and cartoons and comic books, but yet it still manages to feel fresh. I mean, there's a comparison here. I was watching Fate, the Winx Saga thing, which is based on a cartoon, right? It's based on an Italian cartoon. And the biggest difference between that and the cartoon is they decided to go for the darker, gritty reboot for the live action version, right?
The Zack Snyder route.
Yeah, the Zack Snyder route where, you know, these teenagers are all angsty and stuff. But the cartoon was very different because when I was looking at some episodes of the cartoons, their relationships were very different. It was meant to, it was a bit like the DC Superhero Girls cartoon where it's meant to show like all of these characters are super supportive of each other and it's got a good message to it, right?
It just looks really, really weird because they all look like Malibu Stacy with like butterfly wings on them when they're normal.
But with Kid Cosmic, I kind of liked that relationship and the development of those characters. Like it felt like a kind, good-natured show for kids. Like that connection between, you know, this four-year-old Rosa and Kid Cosmic and, you know, how they eventually become friends and how she joins the team, I thought was just a really well-written way of doing it. It didn't feel obvious to me, and I really enjoyed that. So yeah, throughout, you're right about it taking its time, Ian, because by the time we get to the cat, I thought we'd lose Bahe because that's four episodes in. And I was like, I don't think Bahe's going to wait that long for the cat.
Yeah.
No, I mean, Papa G sort of got me going. And look, the little kid screaming Nina Gigantica. I mean, not that. Yeah, I'm completely fantastic. On board. That was great.
She looks like, what's the girl from Peanuts?
Yes, Lucy.
Oh, yes.
Lucy. Yeah. She looks like Lucy from Peanuts as well, which helps. And like it's kind of a, it's almost like the gorillas were pressed into child versions kind of design. It's really, I like that a lot. It's just like those other series, like Dexter's Lab, I think, I remember watching that when it was on TV and I was too old for it anyway, but it was just so amazing. And that was a show where there was zero, you didn't need any setup. And I know that with the 10 episode Netflix thing, because the concept in the title, it's a kid who has a secret lab under his lair, under his house, and for some reason talks with a wacky Euro trash accent again. And it sold it. The Powerpuff Girls were the same as well. It's like, oh, you know, you don't need any setup in any of those episodes. You can watch any of them out of order. Yeah. I think this is trying for something different. It is interesting how we've talked about, like, the going back to the serialization of television and how this is kind of the opposite of that. I think it's playing to those strengths as well in that, you know, burning through all 10, you will be happier. But as I said, I only got through, I'm on the fifth, I think it is. And that's just like, I haven't quite got to the stake, maybe.
Yeah, but I think, you're right. I think episode 5 is the big sort of thing. No, 6 is when it really turns. And I think the serialization and not serialization thing of Kid Cosmic versus something like Powerpuff Girls or Dexter's Lab is that in this instance, it's all available, right? Even if you don't watch it today, you watch it 3 years from now, the entire series is there. You can start, you know, 1, 2, 3, take a pause, and then if you forget, come back to it. So unlike when you're trying to watch Nickelodeon at 4:30, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, when you don't know what episode's coming on and you don't know if you caught the last week's yesterday's episode because you were at tuition, this sort of helps the fact that it's on Netflix means you can watch it in one go.
Yeah. And I mean, it's designed for that very clearly.
Yeah, exactly.
And as a result, that's why it's not grabbing me as much.
And if you're a geek with kids, I think this is a good introduction to all of the geeky concepts, right? Because he kind of delves into everything, alien, sci-fi, fantasy, comic books. There's enough meta stuff for the grown-ups when Lobster Boy is like reading comic books and going, wrong. This is not how an alien invasion happens.
At one point, he refers to that bat guy.
Yes, exactly.
So it's great. Yeah. I mean, they what was it? They call him Stuck Chuck.
Yeah, Stuck Chuck, because he's stuck on the floor and he looks like Chuck.
Yeah. I mean, I really like this. I think this is sort of the one animation that I'm really getting into that is not designed for me in the the adult Rick and Morty stuff, even Final Space, which animation is very kid-like, but, you know, deals with some really dark shit in that one. I really like Kid Cosmic.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's important to know this one is primarily targeted towards kids. So, yeah, show this to your kids, but there's stuff in it for you as well as a grown-up. You can catch Kid Cosmic on Netflix. It's 10 episodes, about 20 minutes each. If you're a McCracken fan, it is definitely one to watch. But even if you're not and you're a geek and you love this kind of superhero sci-fi fantasy stuff, give it a whirl, right? The other thing I just wanted to quickly recommend, I don't know if you guys have seen this, but I got super hooked onto Hilda, which is based on a Scandinavian graphic novel. And it is just another one of those incredibly well thought out kids shows that teach you shit as an adult about dealing with feelings and emotions and stuff like that. It's really, really well done. Oh, so, cool. Yeah, that's about 2 or 3 years old, I think, and that's been on Netflix, but I only caught it a couple of months ago. So I went down this rabbit hole of looking at cartoons on Netflix, and there's a bunch of good stuff for kids. Yeah. All right, let's move on to our movies of the week. You know, we thought we'd start with something good because I think both of the films we've watched this week left us feeling a little meh. This one's called Bliss, and it has a great premise.
I think it's got several great premises.
Well, if you read the synopsis on Amazon Prime Video, it is a blatant lie what this movie is. They make it sound like it is a sci-fi love story / maybe even rom-com from the trailer. It is none of those things.
A mind-bending love story following Greg, who after recently being divorced and then fired, meets the mysterious Isabel, a woman living on the streets and convinced that the polluted, broken world around them is... That's a spoiler.
That is a huge spoiler.
Yeah, that next one's a bit of a spoiler, so I'm just not saying that bit. I think when it comes to reviewing this movie, we're in a pickle. Because if you are going to watch it at all, it's very hard to talk about without giving away certain things in it, but I think that in itself is a failing in the movie, right?
Yes.
I mean, for me, I think okay, so as I was watching this, I was like, oh, is this a little bit like The Matrix? This is a little bit like Inception. Yeah. This is a little bit like that. I don't know why I was getting vibes of that Tom Cruise time traveling thing. Not Tom Cruise, sorry. Tom Hanks. The Wachowskis.
Oh, Cloud Atlas.
Cloud Atlas, yeah.
There was no time travel in that movie, was there? It was just a story across time with different
characters. No, it was a story across time. Yeah. Sorry, I apologize. Sorry. Yes. But so I think when you have that many sort of influences and it comes out, I think it's going to be muddled. It's muddled. Yes.
Yeah. For a film that addresses climate change, universal basic income, happiness as a constant, and how that impacts humanity,
it thinks
it's a lot smarter than it is, or that it needs to be. Like, if you think about those movies you listed, and I'd add existence to that as well, because almost, it's not shot for shot, but there's an awful lot in the existence that's in this. There's no gun that fires teeth, unfortunately, but you know, every movie should have a gun that fires teeth. And like they want to. It's the same guy. It's the Mike Cahill directed Another Earth, which is that Britt Marling film that I always get confused with Melancholia, because both had like new planets appearing and came out at the same time and kind of were dealing with more indie kind of style thinking. And it's wearing its heart on its sleeve because it has the philosopher Slavoj Zizek in it, and Bill Nye turns up, and it's having this kind of like, we want to be smart and we want to be showing you things. But the thing with those, that list again that Bahir gave us, all of those movies didn't withhold. They had a genuine sense of mystery in them, I think. Like in Matrix, you're with Neo. Like Neo is your opening character. And like Morpheus, you never feel like Morpheus is withholding. He's just waiting the right time. You know what I mean? He doesn't do the thing where I'm going to tell you in a minute or something like that. In this, Salma Hayek's character withholds. Why? Because we need to pad out the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, it also pulls this idea from The Matrix that somehow humanity is incapable of accepting utopia.
Yeah.
Right? Mm. But it doesn't go any further with it. And that's what I found incredibly frustrating, because by the time I reach that point, which is the last 10 minutes of the film, right, where they reveal that bit, the whole idea of her experiment and she's doing a little TED talk and etc.
Which in itself is, that TED talk is kind of horrifying.
Yes, correct.
Right?
Very.
Because that's like the...
Because this is the man you're supposed to be in love with, but you're putting him through this really weird thing right now.
Yeah, and the thing he's gone through, it's like, yeah, he's happier, but also, is he dumber?
He's more Owen Wilson than he was at the beginning of the movie.
Which actually, I should say, I was like, oh, this is... Owen Wilson with his hair slicked down. Interesting. And like 10 minutes in, it's like, there's Owen Wilson.
Yeah.
He gets his hair back.
But I reached that point in the film, and then I look at the timing, and I'm like, no, wait. There's not enough time to explore everything you've just revealed. And then it rushes to this ending that feels like it was purposely left ambiguous because he thought, well, this will generate conversation. And I was incredibly fucking frustrated at that point. When a movie ends like this, you know the objective is simple, right? The director wants audiences to go, which was real, which was fake, and then argue
and
about
it. It's and like at no point was, you know, at no point in Inception are you thinking that until that last when he spins it at the end, and you're like,
what?
This film's already answered it. It's not playing. That's why I say it's withholding. It withholds information to generate mystery instead of actually creating genuine mystery by having a smart story or having a genuine level of ambiguity. Like there's a character who says, I know both of these worlds are real to you, but I hope you choose one of them, or you can happily choose one. And it's like, what? Like one is very clearly not real. Like there's a point early on where did you notice there's like people popping into existence behind Salma Hayek's shoulder?
Yes.
There's like three identical people appear, and there's a few other things that happen, and it's just like they didn't ground that as a genuine choice. And you know, and also that getting anywhere around it is just so long, and so much of Salma Hayek being like, just act kooky.
Yeah.
And I had a real problem with that, because I did not like the way her character was written at all, because she starts off and you think, oh no, wait, this is someone who is in complete control of everything, right? Because that's what the show wants you to believe.
Well, except good design, because, I mean, who builds a building without a fire escape, you know, or builds a fire escape, but there's no fucking handle. You have to go build the handle yourself.
But also, she's supposed to be Morpheus, and Morpheus at no point in the Matrix really loses it. You know, he's the dude. And her sudden mood swings in the second half of the film make no sense, because there isn't even a line that goes, oh, wait, I'm losing my grip on this world.
Yeah.
It's always Owen Wilson's losing his grip on this world. And so when she gets angry at him and loses it and acts all crazy, you're like, where did that come from? This isn't who you are, because you know what this is. You have complete control over who you are, and you've not had your mind get scrambled.
The problem with that is that now, as the audience, you're wondering, so is Salma Hayek really losing her marbles? Are they just doing drugs now? Is this...
Well, this is... I mean, that's the ambiguity it wants to play with, but it's not there. And she... I mean, she does say that, you know, you're dragging me down into this base reality, which is kind of like the hint of it. You're accepting it too much. You're believing this... whichever scene we're in now is the real thing and not the real world. And at this point, the audience is like, but this is the real world. So, like, that works in a different movie, but then this movie kind of upends that completely. So it's like, no, she was... In retrospect, it's just like all of these things you set up, all these cards you set up that have to fall in order for the story to work, they didn't fall correctly. They fell off the table and went under the couch.
Yeah, because like at that bit at the TED Talk sequence when suddenly Owen Wilson's character meets someone and you go, wait, and then you I don't know, I was asking myself, wait, how is that there now? Is
that entire subplot is so underdeveloped that every time they cut to a scene involving those characters, I'm like, I don't care where this is going. They just show up, they talk to Owen Wilson, and then they fuck off.
Well, they did say there's probably a remnant. There's a remnant in your something or other. Like,
no, but like,
there's a hole in your mind.
If that's the case, then why are we, the camera, suddenly looking at sequences with those people without Owen Wilson in it? If that's not true, question.
Because someone didn't understand what was going on and said you need to put a scene in there to make sure that the people can understand, but even though that probably then eliminates
just
your
sense makes it
of history.
Yeah, I don't know.
My sense of enjoyment was already gone when they had the person who's credited in the credits as Andy Warhol talking about their grandmother telling them about the world being born aloft on the back of a tortoise, and then the end of the story is it's turtles all the way down.
Not
no
tortoise.
One who tells that story switches between tortoise and turtle.
I got so annoyed at that.
They're not the same
so
thing.
So annoyed at that.
It's like this is basically the Dark Souls of altered reality movies. Like it is a slog to get to what's going on, and even then, it's like it's not that worth it. Although I think it was worth it for. Did you notice at the end? Again, there's like you could do a deep dive into all the little hints, but there's like the safe harbor thing popping up all the time and all these other kind of things. But it's not fucking worth it. The last scene where he's talking to somebody, there's a building behind him, and in the stairwell, there's like shapes. Have you seen that on the windows?
I missed that.
I assume it's like it's got to be intentional, and they're not just filming around the corner from PlayStation's offices there, because the four windows in the building are an X or cross, a square, a kind of a diamond, because it's really hard to do a circle with tape, and then a triangle at the top, and it's like the four PlayStation buttons. I was like, in a cleverer movie, I would write about something about this, but as it is,
not interested.
I honestly think this movie. Apart from everything we've said, was also just a real failure in writing in trying to get us to emotionally connect to any of these characters. Because if I'm supposed to feel anything for Owen Wilson, who's been divorced, he's had a shitty life, we may or may not know if he's been doing hard drugs. And yet, I don't... When you get to a scene where he's at an AA meeting or a Drugs Anonymous meeting, right? That's the point when I should be tearing up, because that's the moment of great fucking revelation, self-reflection, all of that stuff. And I'm just like, eh. Meanwhile, you know, even a movie that is supposed to be cute and fun, like Palm Springs, for example, had me emotionally invested within 10, 15 minutes of the film.
I think it's because within that first 10-15 minutes in this movie, we're watching them beat up old people in a roller skate rink.
What the fuck was that?
Why are we doing this? It's one thing when you take out bullies. I get it. And then Salma Hayek just says, take them out. I'm like, okay.
And I thought that was going somewhere. And like the fact that what they're doing there, how they're taking them out is like a giant like red flag that this is not all is not as it seems. So like that kind of divorces this reality from you accepting this reality. Like you shouldn't be considering this world as the real one if weird shit like this can happen, right?
Mm.
So it's breaking the verisimilitude of the simulation, as it were. And then your ambiguity doesn't work. Your whole making a weird choice for your own bliss doesn't work. Like the message just comes off muddled then. So in the end, you're like thinking, well, Bill Nye had a nice blue suit.
You know what? The one good thing about this movie is I can cut out that clip of you saying verisimilitude of the simulation and just have it on loop. Which I am going to do,
I guess.
And we can now use that as a meme for everything. Breaking the verisimilitude of the simulation. Fuck yeah.
you need to have that on a button.
Yeah.
It's like every time something comes up. Yeah.
We're going to put it up on the all new Goggler store, buy it for a ringgit each.
I think the Wachowskis already sold that on the Matrix Online site sold that.
Yeah, that was the only thing that was missing in this film, right? A fucking white-haired, white-bearded architect at the end spouting philosophical nonsense. I mean, they did have Slavoj Zizek, but, you know.
I was going to say, yeah, there's that guy, yeah.
Yeah, but he's actually real and smart.
Yeah, so real and smart that he didn't turn up on set for the party. He just sent a telepresence hologram.
Exactly.
Can't be bothered.
Bliss is now streaming on Amazon Prime Video. I mean, it's not something we necessarily recommend, but if you're into this kind of supposedly thought-provoking movies, like Mike Cahill makes a lot of them. The other one he did was, other than Another Earth, he did something called iRobot. The name of the movie slipped my mind, but all of his movies do this. They kind of dive, iOrigins, that's what it's called.
iOrigins.
They kind of dive into this ambiguous philosophical questions about the nature of life and reality. But I think Another Earth was the best of the lot. Yeah. So anyway, check it out. Let us know what you think. We're on all the social medias, GogglerMY. You can also email us podcast@goggler.my. And, you know, wherever you're listening to this podcast, make sure you rate it and put a little comment. Tell your friends and family because that really helps us out. Up next, we're going to be talking about the all-new Netflix release, To All the Boys 3, or To All the Boys Always and Forever. This is the third installment, the finale to the All the Boys cinematic universe. I'm saying that because this movie seems to set up a whole bunch of different threads that seem to go nowhere. Maybe they're planning spin-offs with younger sisters and best friends. Who knows? This one was directed by the same guy who did the last film, and I think they were shot back-to-back, but I'm not sure. I know it was shot pre-COVID, which is why you can see scenes in New York City where everyone's at parties.
Not only that, but which is fine, and I think it's weird, like, because this is, you know, Lana Jean's adventures on Earth 2, because they very clearly ground the movie in 2021, and there's events that would never happen
Correct.
In 2021.
Don't you think, like, this is just rubbing it in poor young kids' faces, like, hey, you'll never have this college experience, at least for the next 5 years, right?
Or you'll never have a graduation ceremony.
Correct.
I mean, they shouldn't have just thrown all that out. They should have thrown some of it out. It's a too long fucking movie. But they could have just, like, removed the dates. I think it would have worked. There wasn't that many dates. It was like one letter and then, like, someone else saying it. Like, you could have just, ADR that.
It is set in the alternate 2021.
Yeah. It's like March 2021 and then September or something like that, right?
So, Lara Jean's back. Whole family's back. Graduating, about to go off to college. And this time, I guess the big difference is that there is no real external force that's getting in between her relationship with Peter. This time, it's actually the both of them and their own issues that seem to get in the way, right?
It's mostly her and her issues, really.
Kind of, yeah, exactly.
And they're not even feel like real issues.
No, they're not.
Do they? I mean, I might just be.
Hey. Maybe not for us, but if you are 16, this is a big life choice, and you know, you think you're going to be with this person forever, and it's important, man. Maybe there's stuff to be learned. Who knows? I don't know, because I was screaming at the screen for most of this film. There was one scene that I felt that was really, truly quite authentic and a bit different, which was Lara Jean Okay, it's also totally unbelievable. Lara Jean, who is the most overachieving person, doesn't get accepted into Stanford. Bollocks. Of course she's getting accepted into Stanford.
Well, she's going for English Lit, which they already throw shade on by saying, like, it's the thing people go for if they don't know what they want to do. Yeah. But actually, I really want to do it. And it's like, it should be so fucking easy to get into then. The points are way low. I mean, they don't have a point system. Like, in Ireland, you have points.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
But it's similar. You got to get a certain grade. So maybe she just screwed up her extracurriculars. I don't know.
Maybe. But there's this one scene where she has to admit to Peter that she didn't get in, and they're in a cafe, and
one scene.
Yeah, and no, I thought that bit was quite well written, where she tells him the truth, and you're expecting the rom-com YA trope blow up, right? You lied to me, you've led me down, blah blah blah. And his first question is, "Are you okay?" And I thought, okay, that bit felt a little authentic and real, coming from how his character has grown since the first film.
Also, it feels like the most realistic reaction to that, right? Because anytime the blowout happens, everybody's watching it going, why the fuck are you reacting that way?
Correct.
Yeah. I mean, you were screaming at the screen. I was screaming at all caps in my notes. I was like, normalize life being chaotic. Normalize life going to change. You know, these things are going to happen. Yeah. Be aware that, you know, if you have told someone something accidentally and you need to tell them the truth, just tell them the fucking truth.
It's a text message.
I was like, this, I don't know why. This movie's an hour 49 minutes. It felt longer.
It felt long.
It felt forever.
And I'm like, there's so much, always and forever is how long it lasted. Like a lingering fart, as Kitty says at one point. And I didn't need that. I was like, at that point, there's a 20 minute section where I hate Lara Jean. Cause like the thing is, while Pete is great, there's no character behind Pete apart from his favorite movies, which are a whole different thing we'll get into later. But like, he is the right thing at the right time at all times, but you don't really get into anything apart from he loves lacrosse and he has to go to Stanford. Do you know what I mean?
Well, here's the thing. In this movie, they try to give everyone a little more, but none of it leads anywhere. So in the beginning, the movie opens in Korea because maybe they had some extra budget to shoot in Korea. Nothing there actually has any lasting impact or consequences in the film. Kitty gets a boyfriend, which means nothing in the film.
He gets brought up maybe the three end? Times.
Don't know.
He just disappeared. Well, I mean, you brought up Kitty. Kitty is, I mean, you talked about the To All the Boys cinematic universe. Normalize Kitty being the heart and soul of the
movie. Right?
Kitty needs to have her own movie. She is right at all times. She is amazing throughout this movie.
We said this when we reviewed the first movie back in that other place, and we said that she was the most self-aware individual in this film, and she has remained that way throughout all three movies.
Yeah.
She is. I just referred to in my notes as Kitty the Wise. I mean, she has a name necklace on that says feminist. When there's one of my favorite moments in it. There's an awful lot of moments that like writing shines through. There's one where Lana's in a room working on something, and there's a knock on the door, and she just goes, "Nope," and then the sister walks in anyway. And I just, that was one of the most real kind of moments in it. And as she steals Kitty steals a top and walks out of the room, she's like, "Bring it back," and it just like flies across the room onto the floor. That was just like, that's my 3-minute pop song when it comes to young adult dramas. That was just nailed it. And there's bits of that throughout, but then it's dragged down with the goth Lana. Like, I think Kitty says to her, "Stop being so dramatic." The whole movie needs to listen to Kitty.
And just going back to trying to force character development on people, the whole stuff with Peter's dad just felt shoehorned and went nowhere. They had a meeting in a cafe at the end of the movie, and it doesn't do anything. Yeah, it turned out there wasn't much drama anyway.
I rewound that conversation twice because it's like, that's supposed to be the spur for what he does at the end. And there's one line in it, but I zoned out twice watching it because I was like, why isn't this over? But then it feels like it was directed by two people, which it wasn't. I don't know whether like the author had more control on this one or it flipped around or something like that, because the resolution in the tent is amazing. That moment, you know, and also the restraint not to use the is it Donna Davis song? Donna Lewis song, "I Love You Always and Forever." They don't use that song at all. I'm very happy about
that. Which is saying something, given that this movie feels like
every other song in the world is on the soundtrack.
A giant musical montage.
I like to skip through the credits, and it took a lot of skips to get past just the soundtrack section. But that moment really works, and it's really heartfelt, and it really, like, even in the credit sequence, there's a supercut of the three movies, which works really well. It's just that they should have done more of that, or cut out more of the moping. Because moping,
the moping is one, but I also don't understand why we needed so many montage sequences. Why did we need date montage sequences? There have been two fucking movies of this relationship. You don't need to tell me they're in love. There's 4 hours worth of footage of them being in fucking love.
How else, Bahe, could they recreate a Big Lebowski scene? That's all.
That was great. I love that. I mean, I was like, hey, no one fucks with the Jesus.
It was completely unnecessary.
But every 16-year-old watching this movie is like, what the fuck's going on? What's bowling?
This is the thing I'm going to get into in an article on the website, because it is like, it's a common complaint, or I need to find, there was something about this tweet about, I saw something on this, I see it regularly, and it's the fact that like, it's 40-year-old, no one wants to hear us talk about this movie, but it's like, people our age are writing these movies.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that's why, I mean, I was happy I didn't immediately crumble into dust when they brought up Oasis. And then it was treated nicely. But I mean, also, who the fuck hasn't heard those albums now? You've heard them all on the radio by this point.
I mean, also, I don't understand why. I mean, I'm this is just a nitpick. I'm just being annoying. But like, why does it say Peter Kavinsky's Oasis playlist? It's just the fucking album. You don't have to create a playlist of that. Just share the fucking album.
As someone who originally was overwhelmed by, because this, again, this is people our age doing it, or older. Someone who was originally overwhelmed when I first got Spotify, because it's like, how am I going to find shit? Because originally it was kind of hard to keep track of shit.
Yeah.
And the search didn't always work. And if you were, you know, if all of a sudden you wanted some Oasis, you had to type in Oasis, go to the search, go through, find the artist, not the other band, click on that, go to the album you wanted. Saving the album as a playlist was one of the best ways to do it back in the day. I know this. I recently went through and deleted a load of those album playlists.
So there were Ian McNally's Oasis playlists.
No, I didn't. I wasn't conceited enough to rename them, but it just says Oasis. It just says Oasis.
What's the story, by Morning Ian McNally. Glory?
By Ian McNally. Whereas now it's like, I got that shit dialed in. It's pretty easy. Also, Siri will help. Oops. Don't say her name. You grant her entry. So like, I was like, and he said, oh, I sent you a Spotify playlist. And I was like, ugh.
It's the cute mixtape thing of 2021, right?
But it's not just 40-year-olds writing the scripts. It also feels like a bunch of 40-year-olds who are excited to insert a series of non sequiturs, like cool moments that they want to insert from maybe the kind of pop culture they like, but actually doesn't do much. Like, there was no moment other than Lara Jean going, oh, you sent me more of your music. There was no moment in the previous two films that kind of showed her being resistant to things that Peter liked. Because we got over it when she went to see him play lacrosse, when she went to be the dutiful cheerleader girlfriend kind of thing, right? So I thought they were done with that storyline, because now they're watching movies together, Say Anything or whatever. And
no, but even you say that, but even in this movie, that storyline doesn't even do anything. It's brought
correct.
Up, dropped off, and then left there to sit.
Yeah, they put that movie list in, and then they don't do anything with it because they go bowling. And it's like, I'm sorry, I'm spoiling an article I'm going to write. Like, the X-Men Apocalypse thing is just like, Peter is written to be the perfect boyfriend. Like I said, I've already said he has the right... He does exactly the right thing at exactly the right time. But dear God, of all the X-Men movies, why Apocalypse?
Yeah. Yeah.
What is that about? Is Simon Kinberg involved in this? I don't know.
Maybe he just has really bad taste.
That's... it was just weird. But that's the thing I would bring up, though. It's like, it's not in that. It's like, it's the words of 40-somethings coming out of the mouths of kids is one of those problems that the high school shows can sometimes get.
And it suffers from the problem that a lot of third movies and trilogies do, right? Which is trying to stick the landing when you've set up a whole bunch of stories and characters before, which is why I think they have, oh, look, dad's got his story with the new wife and Kitty's got her story with the boyfriend. But then again, you kind of partially set up something with Lara Jean's nemesis in the last film, and in this one, it's a throwaway moment in New York, and maybe she's not so bad after all, and that's it. And then we don't know what happened to, what's his name, the guy with the Ambrose three names, the love interest from the potential love interest from the last movie. Did he just leave the school? Like, did he just fuck off after summer?
I only remembered, all I remember from the second movie is that he turns up at Oh, he turns up at the beginning of the second movie, but like it was like the missing letter.
The knock on the door.
In the first movie, they hadn't cast him because I can't remember anything apart from when I was watching the supercut at the end and she was in that dress. Like, hang on, wasn't she hanging out with an old lady? Where's the old lady?
Correct. So where are all these people? Because the old lady was fucking Yoda to her.
And it's the same with the, like, it also comes true in the character development because she's now having, Lara Jean is now having reactions that you have in your first Meet Cute movie. You don't have them after you've gone out for a year or two. Like, you know, I sent a message. I sent the wrong message. She gave Pete the wrong idea on being accepted to Stanford. And instead of fixing that immediately, which is what anyone in a relationship would actually do, because they know they're in a relationship and there's probably zero fallout, you know, at that point by saying this. But she doesn't do that because they're writing it like it's the first time they're meeting.
Yeah.
I bring this up a lot, but it factors into this again. It's the Javier Grillo Marx Watchers thing that I wrote about Star Wars and the churn. Like this is the biggest reason why this should have been a TV show, this movie.
Yeah.
Like this is a TV show where you want to see all these little things happen to people all the time. And unfortunately, this movie, the ones that happen to everyone around Lara Jean are more interesting.
Yeah.
Right? Like in her life, it's like everything has to be big and overly dramatic, but then that becomes the churn. You're just seeing her normal life is just that she's a drama queen and that like everyone else around her is living chill. And the way that I think I brought this up when we talked about the last one, like they were, the first one wasn't as like movie aware or cine literate, was it? Was it hints of it?
It was. They had a lot of pop culture references, which they kind of threw in.
Yeah, and they kind of did it a little bit with the second one, but not to the point where you feel like it's their thing. You know what I mean? It's not part of the style
of the relationship as well,
Yeah, and they kind of veer into that here a little bit as well, but not enough where it would make sense where she's living her... Probably someone's already done this where someone's living their movie life and everyone else around them is like, they're being overly dramatic, right? Like, they could have sold it that way. Like, she thinks... there's a line at the end where she talks about movies have taught me that it's all this other stuff. And, like, Pete talks about, oh, yes, it's grand gestures and it's always okay to interrupt a wedding.
Yeah.
He doesn't take that lesson. Good boy. Because he's perfect in every way. He's...
So... So
Peter perfect, practically perfect in every way.
Yeah.
Penelope, that's Titty Bang Bang, right?
Can we establish then that Lara Jean's just the worst?
Yes, and to use her own words. I know, to use her friend's words. Yeah.
You're absolutely right in that assessment, Ian, because I completely missed that. But thinking back to what you just said about how everyone else is leading perfectly non-dramatic lives, I mean, the movie even shows that to us in the way her father proposes, right? It's just this quiet moment between the two of them in the house, which we see through the window. And it is, yes, he's going into this big thing. He's proposing to someone for the first time after the death of his wife. And yet it is this small, quiet, non-dramatic
private moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you'll have to edit this bit out of the podcast because I have to go pitch this script to Hollywood right now. It's the 500. It's not the 500 Days of Summer. It's the High Fidelity of the cinema version of High Fidelity, right? The person who lives their life through the movies, and realizes that that's wrong, and you gotta live in the moment. She spent all three movies like worrying and fretting and writing letters and doing bits and pieces instead of just living her life.
Yeah,
right. Like she's the her stepmom says, you know, you're worrying about this, but your final year, you should enjoy it, and she doesn't really. Did she enjoy her previous two as well? Like, there had to be some all-dominating drama that ruined school for 3 years in a row, right?
Well, we've spoken about this now for 20 minutes, and we're saying this. However, I have a strong feeling if you're 16, this movie is manipulative enough to get you in the feels.
Oh, I my notes for the tent scene at the end, like, just as she's reading the thing... That's 100% feels. That works really, really well. But if I wasn't getting ready for this podcast, I might have peaced out. And I don't peace out on any movies. So I was just like, ugh. Like, I really, after that WhatsApp message was sent, I was like, I do not want to watch this anymore because it's trite and it's lazy.
Yeah.
You know, if it's coming up with a conflict that doesn't feel natural to the characters. I'm saying this about not Star Wars, not an Avengers movie. I'm saying it about To All the Boys movie, the third in the series.
This is how invested we are in the trilogy. I mean, it's important to note that I think all three of us really enjoyed the first film. When we reviewed the first film, we spoke about how it subverted a lot of rom-com tropes. And not just by casting an Asian American in the lead, right? But it went beyond that in the depictions of the father, the relationship with Peter. I think there was one particular thing we noted about, which we loved about the first film, is when they went to that party together and it didn't play out like a rom-com high school party.
Yeah, because those are played out.
Correct.
Yeah. Even the kids going to those parties now have seen those things, or their parents have warned them to watch out for the creepy boy and, you know, don't accept the drink off that guy and all those kind of things. Like, those, they're tropes, but now they're cliches.
And in this film, it felt like they dipped too much into the cliches. You know, right from the, hey, let's ditch this party and go do something crazy and put a sofa in the New York Underground. It didn't fit in with everything else in the movie. Like, if the movie's objective was to show, hey, Lara Jean, you have a wild side, embrace that wild side, which you've never done, then okay. Mm. But it doesn't even do that, really. It kind of hints at it. And so it felt like they were trying to cram too much into this film. And I think you're right, Ian. It would have worked probably better as a TV series. Like, this is season 3. Everything's over. But yeah, the scene in the tent, her last speech at the end, I think if you were 16 or 17 going to university, potentially leaving your boyfriend, significant other, that might hit you in the feels as well. So those moments, I thought, were really well crafted to get the target demographic.
Yeah.
Mm.
To All the Boys, Always and Forever, would have dropped on Netflix by the time you're listening to this.
If you're 16 and you really enjoyed it, let us know.
Yes.
Or if you're older than 16 and didn't enjoy it, also let us know.
Correct.
Or if you're younger than 16 and didn't enjoy it, also let us know.
You're not supposed to be watching it too, but you know.
Well, if you're younger than 16 and listening to this podcast, we apologize for all the cursing.
Well, we apologize to your parents for all the cursing.
Correct. Yeah. You can get in touch with us on all of our social media feeds. That's GogglerMY. You can also email us on podcast@goggler.my.
Did you guys notice they had a Guardian of Forever at the prom?
Was that a Guardian of Forever? They had a little arch.
There's a giant ring with clocks and time and arch. It was in the background of one shot. I was just like, what the hell?
what is that?
Remember from Star Trek?
Discovery.
Oh.
Chuck. No, what's his name? Not Chuck. What was his name?
I can't
remember
his name. The guy
on the planet.
Yeah. Michelle Yeoh into the thing.
Oh.
They had a big ring and it had a city on the other side and there were clocks all over it, like a time portal, because it's the end of your prom area. And I was like, that's weird. And also they built that and didn't use it at all. If I'm taking notes like that in the movie, you've lost me.
To All the Boys, Always and Forever, now on Netflix. Reach out and let us know what else you've been watching or what else you're planning to watch this long weekend. We're always curious, especially if we've missed something that's good that's out there. Once again, you've been listening to the Goggler Podcast.